From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
So I am in the East Lake neighborhood of Oakland.
Glen Park.
Rockridge.
I live in West Alameda.
Coming up, a deep look at why it's taken so long for San Francisco's Bayview District to get a full-service grocery store.
I think that there is a certain level of prejudice that still exists when people think about the Bayview community.
Then, a Bayview-based choreographer explains the appeal of aerial dance.
The idea of getting on a swing and feeling that air is something that we all reach for.
And we meet a young musician who performs at all the most important gatherings.
Baptisms, weddings, quinceañeras, birthday parties, patriotic holidays, and also even at funerals.
Gather with us today on Cross Currents. For some residents of San Francisco's Bayview District, finding the right place to shop for food has always been a challenge.
So when my cousins and aunties are having trouble finding grocery store, you're trying to have a nice holiday dinner and they keep complaining about not having a grocery store. And I tell them, whoa, folk, it's coming.
That's San Francisco Supervisor Malia Cohen, whose district includes Bayview. And what's coming is a new supermarket. But it wasn't easy getting this new store into the neighborhood. Nicole Grigg explains.
Stocking your kitchen with fresh produce, meats, vegan staples, and spices, it's part of the weekly routine for so many of us. But when you live in the Bayview, you may have to go to several places to get what you need. There's no full-service grocery store here, so people have to plan and travel and get creative.
We have a whole gamut of different stores we can go to that collectively we get everything we need.
Everything is always crowded and it's just really nowhere to go and shop over here. Super Save is the only store that they have here to shop, and unless you go to Foodsco or go to Safeway.
You know, you would think that a big corporation like Safeway would do something like that, would come closer in to this area population of people.
Like many residents in the Bayview, traveling several miles and taking multiple buses to get to a one-stop shop like Foodsco or Safeway, it's become the norm, especially after Fresh and Easy Supermarket filed for bankruptcy back in 2013 and shut its doors. Since then, the city's been working hard to fill the void.
It's taken about 3 years, a very long time.
That's City Supervisor Malia Cohen. She's heard many excuses as to why retailers didn't want to move into this particular location.
The mayor and I joined in penning a letter to over 180 retailers. And we reached out to many people as far as Atlanta, but there was no takers.
The list of 180 retailers included places like Target, Whole Foods, Foodsco, and many more. They all said no.
And let's be clear, Safeway turned us down on multiple occasions.
What did they say? It's a lie.
They said thank you, but no thank you. We're interested in another development, the one in the Shipyard. That conversation didn't last long. It was really offensive. And so I made a personal commitment to really not spend time with companies or entities that couldn't see the value of being in the Bayview community and didn't understand that they were walking into a wonderful opportunity, that they were not doing any favors to us by coming in, that we were doing them a favor or by allowing them to come into the community.
So stores do want to move in, but Cohen says they're more drawn to the new developments, like the $7 billion project underway at the Navy shipyard at the waterfront. But for Cohen, the resistance didn't make economic sense, especially since a grocery store is needed right now.
Because when you look at the numbers, the amount of disposable income, the fact that there is zero to very little competition, you would think one would be attracted to come set up shop and do business in the neighborhood.
Another reason Cohen thinks it's been so hard to get a grocer here is the demographics of this working class neighborhood, populated mostly with people of color.
I think that there is a certain level of prejudice that still exists when people think about the Bayview community. They don't see it as the alive and thriving community that I see it as well as the neighbors.
Back on 3rd Street, renovation is in the air. The T line runs right through this busy area, connecting the neighborhood's mix of family homes, restaurants, new businesses, and apartment complexes. The historic Bayview Opera House has been restored. Houses in the area are selling at record-breaking prices. And finally, a new market. Duckloy Pantry is moving in.
A Duckloy Mint is ethical earnings, and this is the third generation from my grandpa to my dad, and now passing to me.
Howard Ngo is a small business owner. He and his wife own another supermarket in the Mission District. The city offered a $250,000 grant and helped the family business secure a $4.1 million loan to build in this new space. The name, Duckloy, is not well known like an Albertsons or a Whole Foods. In fact, some wonder whether it will be able to offer the community what they actually want, like foods that are staples for the diverse kitchens in this area. After all, the Bayview is one-third African-American, nearly one-third Asian, and about 25% Latino.
So we're going to make sure all kind of level, whether Latino, whether Asians, or whether African-Americans, when they step in my store, they have something for them, ready for them.
He says he'll also have a suggestion box so customers can request items too. And he's betting that his new employees will be his ambassadors, since the majority of them live in the Bayview.
And I especially hire the neighbor employee, such as you just say, African Americans, and they got to support me, they got to, and then I will work with them, and then we will gradually increase whatever the neighbor needs for grocery or for food.
But wait. Many residents were hoping for a major commercial chain to move in. So will people even go to a local market with an unfamiliar name like Duckloy? Gloria Hall says,
I'm not familiar with that, just my first hearing, so I will give it a chance to see what it's like.
Howard thinks there are ways to get people familiar with the new name in the neighborhood. His children are in charge of marketing and neighborhood outreach. Vivian Zhu, Howard's soon-to-be daughter-in-law, attends community meetings to ask residents what they'd like in the new store.
They ask us if we're going to have fresh produce. It seems to be a pretty big deal, fresh produce, so of course we will. They also asked if we're going to have a full-service meat counter, which we are. And they also wanted us to not carry too much pre-packaged stuff.
Vivian also says they'll have a hot food counter and Pete's Coffee is moving in too. But having access to fresh food options without having to travel for miles, it's a big deal for Bayview residents. I asked Supervisor Cohen to explain the current food climate.
Pre-Duckloy, let me tell you, we are making lemons out of lemonade, if you will. So you've got the Super Save, right? And they have done the best of their ability to reconfigure their store so that they are selling healthier food options. So there are about 13 liquor stores in the Bayview neighborhood. There are four of them that made a commitment to the community through partnership with an organization called CIFA. It's the Southeast Food Access. This network of community organizations and people just saying, hey, look, enough is enough. If we show you how you can reconfigure your liquor store to sell fruits and vegetables, will you do it? And they said yes.
After an arduous battle to negotiate the opening of this grocery store, the question remains, will Duckloy be successful? I asked some Bayview shoppers if this might become their new go-to market.
I don't know anything about it, but I would definitely go pay it a visit. Yes, sure. Why not? We need something like this in our neighborhood. We're the last place that get the investment like that, so sure.
It would do me some good, because then it keeps me from traveling, changing from bus to bus, you know, carrying bags, when I could just get on one bus, go shopping, get back on the same bus, back home.
Duckloy, I give them all the props in the world for making that kind of move, coming into the community, making an imprint on making it better nutritional-wise for our community. And I believe that a lot of folks would shop there.
For Cross Currents, I'm Nicole Grigg.
Those were the voices of Freddie Carter, Gloria Hall, and Ross Rhodes. The new Duckloy Pantry is scheduled to open in September. Welcome back to Cross Currents, Context, Culture, and Connection from around the Bay Area. I'm Julie Kane, in for Hanat Bhava. For our next story, we're going to stay in the Bayview to hear from a choreographer who dances in and above the neighborhood. Joanna Highgood makes site-specific and aerial dance. That's dance that takes place outside or on specially built structures or even suspended by ropes and harnesses high above the ground. She's been making work like this for her company Zocco Dance Theater for over 30 years. In 2014, she founded the San Francisco Aerial Arts Festival. It showcases all kinds of performance that takes place off the ground and above our heads. This year's festival is this weekend at San Francisco's Fort Mason Center. KALW's Jen Chien spoke with Joanna Highgood about the festival and the joy of dancing in the air.
What kind of training or what kind of skill building did you need to do as a dancer and as a choreographer to be able to make dances like on the side of a building or hanging mm-hmm. from a giant clock or, you know, on a steel structure?
Well, the training is ongoing, actually, because each site demands a different skill set. So, you know, sometimes there's a lot of climbing that's required. Some of it is... involves rope and harness work. Some of it, it just really varies. So I guess the best thing that I can say is that when we get to the site or when I'm kind of investigating, doing field measurements, getting an understanding or a sense of what this place is, I try to kind of incorporate things that actually make sense to the site. You know, right now I'm working on a piece that is in an old military installation at Fort Mason, mm-hmm. Center for Arts and Culture, and I'm working in the Festival Pavilion, which was, at the time that it belonged to the Army, was Pier 3. And it's a warehouse space that has, that had
so
lots
high
of material,
ceilings.
High ceilings. And so we've been working with kind of the military training vocabulary. So a lot of rope climbing, a lot of ladder climbing, a lot of calisthenics. And that's very, very different than, you know, as you cited, the clock tower, where that was rappelling on ropes and working kind of with the mechanics of the clock itself, or really the kind of the structure of the clock, making sure that we don't destroy it.
That's
it
important.
Took a lot of timing practice to make sure that we don't pull up, you know, the hands. And, you know, it looks quite sturdy, and it is, but it's, on the other hand, it's quite fragile. You know, the face of it is glass and the hands are wooden, so easily destroyed by a group of people jumping up and down on it.
It seems like aerial dance and aerial arts have been kind of having a moment in the culture. They're growing mm-hmm. in popularity, so moving beyond the circus world and then the contemporary dance world and kind of making their way into pop culture. The singer Pink does like a serious trapeze act in her big concerts that you would see at Shoreline Amphitheater or somewhere like that. Yeah. So what do you think it is that's resonating with people about this form nowadays?
Well, I think everybody has had that fantasy of flying. I mean, I think that, from the moment you are a young child, the idea of getting on a swing and feeling that air on your skin and through your hair is something that we all, you know, reach for. And I think people are also a lot more conscious of the potential of their own bodies in terms of strength and health. And I think people are really attracted to these two things kind of together.
Are those some of the things that draw you to this kind of work as well?
I think for me, there are a number of things. I'm really interested in creating work that is more dimensional. I'm really interested in the kind of the sculptural aspects that the aerial work can offer. And I'm really interested in perspective, the way that you see things when they're put in different places, and particularly from the point of view of the aerialist, you know, being in these places that are rarely walked on or explored.
So as a performer, you get to see things.
It's an adventure. It's very adventurous.
I'm speaking with choreographer and site artist Joanna Highgood, artistic director of Zocco Dance Theater. This is the second time that you've put on the San Francisco Aerial Arts Festival. The first time was 2 years ago. It was much smaller. It took place in your dance studio, mm-hmm. Zacco in the Bayview. This time, it's a lot more artists, international artists, mm-hmm. and you're doing it at Fort Mason. It's a whole weekend. So tell me about some of the different kinds of aerial arts that you'll be presenting. Mm-hmm. So people might be familiar with trapeze.
Yeah, there's some work that comes from circus. There's a Chinese pole act that's performed beautifully by Calvin Kaiku, who's from Circus Center. Let's see, who else? And there's Bandaloupe, of course, who's, you know, a pioneer dance, aerial dance company.
And they work in rope and harness,
they
right?
work in rope and harness work. They've worked all over the world. I think Amelia Rudolph, who's the founder and director, has been a very, very strong influence in the form over the years. And, you know, their work is really inspirational. A lot of her work, you know, kind of is born out of her relationship to nature and climbing.
Rock climbing,
yeah. So
they have some amazing videos that folks can look at online of just beautiful rope and harness dancing in nature on mountainsides, cliff sides.
Yeah, really, really quite beautiful and very, very moving work. When people think about aerial arts, they think about trapeze arts or rope or straps, so, you know, circus work and things that are confined in a theater format or a circus tent, for instance. And we're hoping to kind of break, you know, people out of that.
Literally out of the box of the building.
Out of the box of the building. And it is
onto
our,
the outside of
exactly.
the box.
And thinking about dance more dimensionally, you know, it doesn't have to be confined to this two-dimensional plane. It can actually move up, you know, vertically, horizontally, diagonally, laterally.
That was aerial choreographer Joanna Hygood speaking with KALW's Jen Chien. The second biennial San Francisco Aerial Arts Festival takes place this weekend at Fort Mason. For a link to more info, go to our website, kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Julie Kane, in for Hanat Bava. We're going to shift gears now, from dance to song. Okay, picture a mariachi band. Maybe you're seeing a group of handsome men dressed in fancy clothes, playing guitar, trumpet, violin, singing full voice to people in a Mission District restaurant. But that's not all mariachi is about, and restaurants aren't where most mariachi music is performed. KALW's student reporter Samaria Pineda introduces us to a Richmond musician who's been playing mariachi since she was a young girl.
I walk into a white building that looks like a brand new house. It's on the site of St. Cornelius Church in Richmond. Parents are outside talking to one another, waiting for their kids to finish their practice. Inside, a few youth mariachi bands are practicing. All around me are instruments playing and people singing. I feel like one of my favorite songs is playing, and I want to keep pressing the replay button. I came here to see my cousin. She's in one of the mariachi bands practicing today.
My name is Anna Leslie Pineda.
Leslie's 18. She plays the violin and sings in the band called Cuerditas de Oro. I was introduced to mariachi when Leslie began playing. Her mariachi band plays at her family parties from time to time. And last year, I saw her perform for Cinco de Mayo at St. Peter's Church in San Francisco. Cinco de Mayo is an important celebration of culture and heritage for mariachi players and the Mexican people. When she performed, I had never heard her pour her heart into her songs like that until that day. I felt proud of her and proud of this beautiful music that was being shared at church that day. I sit with Leslie and she explains the different instruments that are in a mariachi band.
So there's violins, trumpets, and some mariachis, a vihuela, and also a guitarrón.
Some of these instruments, like the guitarrón, originated in Mexico. The vihuela has been a part of mariachi since it began.
I personally like the beautiful sound it makes because it's like a guitar, but it's also different in the way that it has less strings and it's rounder and smaller.
People embrace their culture in different ways. Many Mexicans embrace their culture by listening and playing mariachi music.
So the first mariachi began in Mexico in Jalisco.
That was in the early 19th century.
People who really enjoyed that music over there, they brought those influences here so other people could also hear this wonderful music and have the same experience they had.
Today at practice, the members are wearing sweatshirts and jeans, but during their performances, they wear uniforms.
So mariachis wear a charro suit, and that consists of the men wearing a jacket and high tight pants, and while the women wear a jacket and high skirts with boots accompanied with it.
Their jacket sleeve and at the side of their pants has small red and green patterns. Today at practice, they are preparing for a gig that they have on Saturday. Leslie was introduced to mariachi at a young age. Her dad plays the violin as well.
I started around the age of 9-10 years old. My cousins, they were also part of the mariachi group.
Mariachi has been incorporated into the Sunday Mass here. It started becoming a part of Catholic Mass at some Mexican churches in the 60s as a way to connect Mexican culture with the religion that many Mexicans are a part of. This mariachi group usually plays on Sunday afternoon at St. Cornelius Church, but the music isn't just played there. A lot of people have mariachi groups play at parties and other events.
I think a mariachi member should be fun, energetic, and show that you're also having fun as well.
At parties, mariachi is not just music to be played and sit back and listen to. It is music to be danced to. It is played at events that celebrate the best moments in the lives of the Mexican people.
Baptisms, weddings, quinceañeras, birthday parties, patriotic holidays, and also even funerals.
If it is an important celebration, it is important for a mariachi band to be there.
The mariachi is there for a reason, to uplift the souls. Sometimes I just pray before going on stage.
The audience is happy, passionate, and intrigued when they hear this music. The mariachis move with their instruments, and the audience follows them as they see that they are having fun.
And they also sing along with us.
Mariachi is more than just music. It is cultural, spiritual, and traditional to Mexico and its people. Their songs speak about love, death, betrayal, machismo, politics, and revolutionary heroes. Mariachi has been passed down from generation to generation. It is a way to ensure that Mexican traditions are passed down too. My cousin's group is for older students. They have been in this mariachi class over 5 years. I was able to sit in one of the young kids' mariachi practice too. My cousin once was in the same position that the younger ones are in now. They sound so good. By taking these classes, these kids and young adults will continue the tradition of playing mariachi into the next generation. In Richmond, this is Samaria Pineda for Cross Currents.
Samaria Pineda was a student reporter in our high school summer internship program. She currently attends Immaculate Conception Academy in San Francisco. And that's it for today's show. Our team today includes Jürgen Klemm, Jeremy Dalmas, Leela Day, Olivia Henry, Chris Hoff, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. Our show today was engineered by James Rollins. Line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by Bay Area singer-songwriter Paul Griffiths. You can see him at the Intimate Monkey House in Berkeley this Friday. Show starts at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Julie Kane. Contrite. Sorry, it's a San Francisco joke.